जय
जय
समदैत भक्तवृंद की जय
जय
गौर प्रेमानंदे
हरि को
ओ ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज
हरे कृष्ण
ओ ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज
हरे कृष्ण
ओ ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज
हरे कृष्ण
ओ ग्लोरियस टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा ओ ग्लोरियस टू श्री प्रभुपाद नमः ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण वस्तुय नमः श्रीमती भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नीति नमने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणि प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष सन्निवानि भास्कर्याय सिद्धारिणे वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीवैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणा रघुनाथं वितं तं सजीवं सद्वैतं सद्वदूतं परिजनसहिता कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदं सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखं वितंश्च Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo
It's October 1st, 2009, here in Munich. We're reading from Canto 4, Chapter 12. Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead, text 46. Shudvaitachchadhaya abhikshnam achyucha priyache titam bhavad bhaktir bhagavati yayasyat klesha sanshaya. Shudvaitachchadhaya Chadhaya bhikshnam achyuta priyache titam bhaved bhaktir bhagavati yayasyat klesha sangshaya. Shutva. Shutva. By hearing.
By hearing.
Etat.
Etat.
This.
Shraddhaya.
With faith.
With faith.
Abhikshnam.
Repeatedly.
Achyuta. To the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Priya.
Dear. Chestitam.
Activities.
Bhavet. Develops.
Bhaktihi.
Devotion.
Bhagavati.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yaya.
By which.
Syat.
Must be.
Klesha.
Of miseries,
sangshayaha,
complete diminution.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Anyone who hears the narration of Dhruva Maharaj and who repeatedly tries with faith and devotion to understand his pure character attains the pure devotional platform and executes pure devotional service. By such activities, one can diminish the threefold miserable conditions of material life. Purport. Here the word achyutapriya is very significant. Dhruva Maharaj's character and reputation are great because he is very dear to Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Lord are pleasing to hear, hearing about his devotees who are very dear to the Supreme Person is also pleasing and potent. If one simply reads over and over again about Dhruva Maharaj, by hearing and reading this chapter, one can attain the highest perfection of life in any way he desires. Most importantly, he gets the chance to become a great devotee. To become a great devotee means to finish all miserable conditions of materialistic life. Shutvaitach shradhaya bhikshnam achyuta priyachetitam bhaved bhaktir bhagavati yaya syat klesha sankshaya. Anyone who hears the narration of Dhruva Maharaj and who repeatedly tries with faith and devotion to understand his pure character attains the pure devotional platform and executes pure devotional service. By such activities, one can diminish the threefold miserable conditions of material life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really liked to hear the story of Dhruva Maharaj and said that he and Ganadhar Pandit would listen over and over again. Prabhupada saying here, over and over again. Simply reads over and over. And they would sit and read and discuss over and over and over about Dhruva Maharaj. And this story of Dhruva Maharaj is particularly enlivening. Of course, it's very enlivening for the pure devotees to see the great mercy of the Lord, and it is also very enlivening for a conditioned souls, because as conditioned souls, we can relate to Dhruva Maharaj's journey. I remember once speaking with a devotee about the idea of making films about Krishna's pastimes, and in that way we could transform the world into Krishna consciousness. Do you need me to go more slowly? Can you do simultaneous translation, or it's too difficult for you?
No, it's too difficult that she can.
She can do it. I'll wait for her. I'll just wait.
It's also something that not the best English. And then what I want to say when you were spoken and when I was listening up is too very rude. I didn't want to say pious, I wanted to say honest.
Ah. Okay.
My English is not very good.
Yes.
I want to say honest.
Okay, so I'll start over again.
Okay.
So here Prabhupada is saying that we should hear this story of Dhruva Maharaj over and over again. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to particularly like to hear this story. He and Gadadhar Pandit would listen to this story of Dhruva Maharaj over and over again. So the pure devotees relished this story because of the great mercy and love of the Lord. How the Lord is so kind that even though Dhruva approached the Lord with his own personal motives, still Krishna gave him himself. And even the conditioned souls very much like this story of Dhruva, because this story is so much like our own story. Right? Dhruva was not looking for something spiritual. He was looking for something material. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that people come to him, their original desire to come to him is almost always material. Krishna gives four reasons for people to come to him, and three of them are material, and one of them is spiritual. And the first one is one wants some wealth. In other words, you want positive material enjoyment. And Dhruva Maharaj is the person who personifies this way of approaching the Lord. I want to be happy. I want enjoyment. I want pleasure. Another motive is I want to be free from suffering. And Gajendra personifies this mentality. I'm going to the Lord to free me from suffering. Another reason to come to Krishna is curiosity. One is thinking, I wonder what the truth is. I wonder if there's a God. I wonder what's going on in life. So those are all material reasons. They're not based on love for Krishna. Of course, even the last reason, someone who is seeking after knowledge, which is very, 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 very rare, that is still not love, although it is not material. Seeking after knowledge means someone who has already realized the Brahma Jyoti, who has already realized that they're not this body. They've already understood that they're not this body. They've already in Brahman realization, and now they want something higher. So that's a spiritual desire, but that is extremely rare. Sometimes we think, I have come to Krishna looking for knowledge, but maybe one in a million are coming to Krishna with that motive. Generally, we're coming to Krishna because we want happiness, we want freedom from distress, or we're curious, or some mixture of that. And you see that most religious systems in the world are preaching either happiness or liberation. They're preaching either you can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy, or you can get salvation. And those motives are certainly driving us for quite a long time, even in Krishna consciousness. I mean, one difference between what we're preaching and what most religious systems are preaching is that we're saying that love of God and pure devotional service is the highest goal. Whereas many other religious systems are teaching that heaven is the highest goal or that salvation is the highest goal. So the difference is in our goal. Therefore, we say even an immature devotee is still a pure devotee, except in an immature stage. But this Dhruva is very much like most of our motives. He wanted to be happy. He wanted to be happy. And the good thing is that he was going to Krishna for his happiness instead of just trying to become happy by going to business school. He said, I'm just going to worship Krishna. And we see in this journey of Dhruva, the journey of a normal, average person from a materialist to a self-realized person. And as one studies this, and here it said, one should study with faith, repeatedly study with faith and devotion to try to understand. So not blindly. We're not, Prabhupada says, blind faith is condemned. And one should try to understand very deeply all the aspects of this story of Dhruva Maharaj. Now, here again is the part of the chapter where we're being given the benedictions of hearing this story. And it's very interesting. Some of the stories in the Bhagavatam, no particular benediction is given at all. And sometimes it's just very brief, such as, if you hear this story, you're free from all sins. But we find in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, there is one verse after another, after another, after another, telling us what benedictions we will get from this story. So, of course, in the previous verse, we were reading about how one can get a long duration of life, go to the heavenly planets. Here it says one can finish all of our material miseries. And Prabhupada says something very interesting in this purport. He says one can attain the highest perfection of life in any way he desires. So this refers back to the previous verse, that whatever I think is perfection, I can achieve that through studying about Dhruva Maharaj. How wonderful it is. Because basically studying about Dhruva Maharaj, being devotional service, being the ultimate, we could say, pious activity, although it's not a pious activity in an ordinary sense, it gives one the qualification to have even great material happiness. Krishna gives great material happiness to anybody who follows the rules of the universe. But Prabhupada says here, most importantly, it gives you the chance to become a great devotee. It seems that Prabhupada's saying that what we should aspire to is being a great devotee. Now, of course, in the material conception of life, generally we want to be a great devotee because we want the happiness of devotional service, or we want the liberation, or we want the respect. Everybody will look at me and say, oh, you're a great devotee. Right? In the material life, we want to be known as great because we've done some wonderful thing, or we're very intelligent, or we're very strong, or we're very beautiful, or we're very talented, and we want people's acclaim. But Prabhupada's saying here, we should want a kind of greatness. It's not a kind of greatness. So the desire for greatness is not wrong, but there's a particular kind of desire for greatness that we should cultivate. So I was just reading day before yesterday in Krishna book how Akura is going to Vrindavan. And when Akura is going to Vrindavan, he's thinking, when I go to Vrindavan, Krishna will look at me, he'll touch me, he'll recognize me, he'll accept me. He'll say, oh, my dear Uncle Akura. And Prabhupada writes there that we must work to be recognized by Krishna. If we don't work to be recognized by Krishna, our life is a waste of time. So we should be wanting to be such a devotee that Krishna will call us to see him. As Prabhupada likes to quote Bhaktisiddhanta saying, we should not try to see Krishna, but work in such a way that Krishna will want to see me. Trying to see Krishna is like if I want to see the head of Germany, and so I go to the place where the person lives, and I'm just banging on the door. You know, I'm writing letters, I'm walking in front of the building with a sign. That's the mood of demanding. I want to see Krishna. Why aren't I seeing Krishna? I'm doing so much service, I'm doing so much surrender. When am I going to see Krishna? But the mood of the devotee is, when is Krishna going to be pleased with my service? This is such a natural thing. Such a natural thing. When we were in Russia, some devotees were doing a dance with fireworks. Incredible. Like a person twirls a stick, you've seen in a dance, but on the ends of the stick there were fireworks. And so as they're twirling the stick, the fireworks are going everywhere, and it was a group of dancers dancing like this. Even they had fireworks coming out of their costumes. Incredible show. And I'm thinking, why are they doing this? They're doing it because they want us to be happy. They want the audience to enjoy the show. That is their goal. Everything we're doing is because we're trying to please somebody. We're hoping that they'll notice. Like I was seeing you cleaning the floor. So why are we cleaning the floor? Maybe we like to live in a clean place also. But we're hoping somebody will look and say, oh, such a clean floor. We want to, this is our natural desire, is to give happiness to somebody else. That's how we're made. Because really, that's how Krishna is. Krishna has created us, not that we're ever created, but Krishna, the reason we exist is for this exchange of giving happiness to one another. So we can give happiness to Krishna and he can give happiness to us. That is the idea. So we're hoping that Krishna is happy with my service. Krishna is happy with my service. Just like, again, in ordinary, we're cleaning the floor and we're hoping that especially the leader will say, oh, the floor is so clean. Thank you very much. Anybody who says we're happy, but especially if the leader says, we become very happy. Oh, they're pleased with me. You're working in a company. What you want is for the other workers and the boss to say, I really like the work you're doing. It's really, really good work. Thank you very much. So being a great devotee means like that. It means that we get a message, okay, come into my office. And Krishna says, thank you very much. Now, Jesus tells a story like this. He tells the story of the three servants. You know this story? So a master had three servants, and before he went on a journey, he gave some coins to his servants. So one servant, he gave 10 coins. You know this story? One, he gave 5 coins, and one, he gave 1 coin. So the man who got 10 coins, he invested the money, and I think the money increased like 10 times, so he got 100 coins. The one who had 5, I think he doubled it, became 10. And the one who had 1, he buried it. He thought, he put it in the ground. And he thought, I'll keep my master's money very carefully. And when the master came back, he was very pleased with the 2 servants who increased the money. But the one who put it in the ground, he took that away. And of the 2 who increased, he said, well done, good and faithful servant. So that is what we are desiring. That the devotees, Guru, Krishna, they look at what we are doing and they say, well done, good and faithful servant. That is the kind of greatness that we are looking for. We're going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow also. But we want to be recognized. The study I did in university was of job satisfaction, and I did a study of job satisfaction of people who work in Hare Krishna schools. And one of the keys to people being happy in their work is recognition. So often in the Hare Krishna movement, we think recognition is bad. I shouldn't want recognition. I shouldn't be working for recognition. But Prabhupada says, if we are not working for Krishna to recognize us, then our whole life is condemned. Useless life. So we should want to be recognized, but we should not want to be recognized in a worldly sense. That people are saying, oh, you're so clever, you're so this, you're so that, not thinking I am the doer. But we want to be recognized for our reciprocation of love. We should desire to be that kind of a great devotee. Now, Prabhupada says here, and referring back to the verse, that if one becomes such a great devotee, then all of his material miseries will be finished. Now, it's very interesting, again, and we pointed this out yesterday, that throughout the Shastra, and also throughout the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and all of the Acharyas, we will find this sort of inducement to take up devotional service. Because when, again, as I started in the beginning of this class, when we take up devotional service, it is pretty much always for one of those 4 reasons. I'm looking for happiness. Can you turn so you're not back? Yeah. I'm looking for happiness. I want to get free from distress. I'm curious, or very, 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 very rare situation, I'm already Brahman realized and I'm looking for higher knowledge. So while we're still on this stage, if the scriptures would say to us, if you hear this story of Dhruva Maharaj, you will just be a totally surrendered soul. You'll be a selfless servant without any material desires, just giving everything to God. We'd say, I don't want to do that. Why would I want to do that? To a conditioned soul, that does not sound very attractive. That does not sound very interesting. In fact, it sounds pretty scary. When Bhaktisiddhanta says that Krishna is the transcendental autocrat. So for us in modern society, the idea of an autocrat is very frightening. And we are thinking, oh, Krishna's an autocrat? Oh, we already got rid of Hitler and Stalin and Mussolini. Now we're going to get another autocrat? And we become afraid. Right? I don't want an autocrat. I want democracy. And so if that is what is given as the benediction in the scriptures, we'll probably not do it. It probably won't interest us. So the scripture is saying, if you take to this process, you will become happy and you will become liberated. And then we think, yes, I'm very interested in this. This is something that I want. So let's look at here as to why becoming a great devotee, which means that Krishna is recognizing you, will give one liberation. To become a great devotee, Prabhupada says, means to finish all miserable conditions of material life. Why does that work? Well, what are material miseries? What are they, really? There's something that's happening to the body and the mind. We had a long discussion yesterday about how we're not the body and the mind, how we're just an observer, which Krishna talks about in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and in the 18th, maybe another place as well, but at least those two places, that we're not really doing things. You know, while I'm taking this water and drinking the water, I am not drinking this water. The body is doing it. I'm watching only. I am just watching and desiring. So like right now I have a cold, which is why I'm not speaking very loudly. And my voice probably sounds a little funny. So that's misery, but it's a misery of the body. It's not touching me, the soul. Now let's say I stop identifying with this body. If I stop identifying with the body, I will no longer feel the miseries of the body. Now, one can do this as an experiment, even materially. So I remember reading this in Teachings of Lord Kapila, where Prabhupada says that Stalin was afraid he was going to be murdered when he had an operation. So he said, I don't want any anesthesia. So he had the surgery without any anesthesia. Now, I have personally met people who had surgery without anesthesia. And the way they do it is exactly what Prabhupada describes. They situate their mind in a detached way. In modern language, that's called hypnosis. Right? So I decided I was going to learn that. I was at that time expecting my second child. And I thought, I'm going to have childbirth without pain. And I did it. I actually did it. I had zero pain. And what I did was I went into a state of relaxation and I meditated on the deities. So that actually I was just focused on the deities. In my mind, I was just seeing the deities. And I could feel what was happening in my body, but it was just interesting. It wasn't painful. I did not experience it as pain. I could feel all the muscles are moving this way and that way. Oh, how interesting. And I got a little understanding of what does it mean to be free of material miseries. When you're free of material miseries, you notice the miseries, but you don't feel them as miseries because your consciousness is someplace else. And, of course, we have this experience if we're driving a car and the car is low on petrol. So we notice the car is low on petrol, but we don't feel a pain in our own body. I don't feel hunger. The car's hunger is not my hunger. It's just, oh, that's interesting. I have to go to the petrol station and put petrol in the car. But there's no sense of misery. So this is the way one gets free from the material miseries. It is not that by performing devotional service and being recognized by Krishna, that all the miseries will go away in some material sense. It is not that if you become recognized by Krishna, you will never get sick and you will never get old and, you know, nobody will steal your money and Krishna will give you a perfect life in the material world. Maybe he will, but generally not. But the way one that gets free from all material miseries is one is getting one's happiness from something else. It's really a very, very simple thing. And I've given this example so many times. If you're in a movie theater and you're watching the movie, then the happiness and distress of the characters in the movie become your happiness and distress, isn't it? Someone's following the person with a gun and you're perspiring. And you're afraid. But if you're in a shop where they're selling television sets, and they're, of course, they're showing some movie on the television set, and you're walking past, and you see the same thing. You see one person is pointing a gun at somebody else. You don't feel any fear. Why? Because you're not watching the movie. You're not absorbed in the movie. And you may just look and say, oh, that is interesting. And that's all. Nothing more. Or just like I had not checked up on the news for maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks. So yesterday I thought maybe I should find out what's happening in the world. And I saw there was an earthquake in the Pacific Ocean and there was a tsunami. And many people died in the earthquake and in the tsunami. But I don't know any of those people. So I was just thinking, oh, that's interesting. I'm thinking, I wonder if this hurt anybody I know, because I know many people in New Zealand and in Fiji and in Hawaii. And they said, oh, there were big waves in Fiji, but no damage. I thought, okay, no problem. It said that many people died in American Samoa, and it's an emergency, and entire villages have been destroyed. But I did not feel any misery. Why? Why didn't I feel any misery? Zero misery. Because I have no attachment. I don't know anybody in American Samoa. Now, if there was a tsunami in Hawaii where my children lived, and if it said on the news the whole town of Hilo has been finished, then I would be very upset. I'd be crying. I probably wouldn't want to give the class today. I would just be crying. Oh, my children are dead. My children are dead. So why am I feeling misery for one and not misery for the other? It is due to attachment. When one becomes a great devotee, the attachment becomes shifted to reality. One still has attachment. My dear friends, do not think that... That's okay. How old is she?
She's 14 months.
14 months. You're so well behaved for 14 months. You're just sitting there quietly. That's very nice. I hope in my next life, when I'm 14 months, I can sit quietly. So sometimes we are thinking that spiritual life means just detachment. But that is not possible. By nature, we are attached. So a great devotee means I'm becoming attached to the reality. Now, in the reality, there's no birth, there's no death, there's no disease, there's no age, old age, there's no pain. That's reality. Therefore, I'm not feeling the material miseries. I may be aware of them. Of course, sometimes even the great devotees are not even aware. It's described just like someone who's very intoxicated. They may forget whether or not they have clothes on. They don't even notice. So sometimes a person is so absorbed in the spiritual, they don't even notice the body. They don't even notice the bodily miseries, and it says then Krishna just takes care of their body. When they are in deep internal consciousness. And this is the only way to get free of material miseries, is to become completely attached to truth. This material body, this material mind, thinking this is me, That is false thing. That is not true. Just like a movie is a false thing. Exactly like that. Of course, it is not that it doesn't exist, but it's not what it appears to be. It looks like somebody is using a gun and somebody is running and somebody is screaming. But none of that is actually happening. What is just happening is there are some three lights, three colors of lights mixing. So what is really happening here is goodness, passion, ignorance are just mixing. And from goodness, passion, ignorance mixing, this story is coming. I am this person, I am sitting here, I am going this, I am getting that. I have a cold, somebody is hitting me, somebody took my money. It's just a story from the three modes. And we are watching and we are thinking, yes, this is my story. So when actually you think, really, I don't have a relationship with this body and mind. I have a relationship with the person in the projector booth with Krishna. And then when I have that relationship with Krishna, then the material miseries do not touch me. And that said here can be achieved by meditating over and over again on this story of Dhruva Maharaj. Because as we meditate on this story of Dhruva Maharaj, we get so much appreciation and gratitude and love and affection for Krishna and his devotees. That same attachment that we now have for this body, for this mind, for our family, for our money, for our home, for our car, for our clothes, for our whatever, that same attachment we get for Krishna. We think how wonderful Krishna is. How wonderful Krishna is. Dhruva came to him for money and he gave him all spiritual knowledge. And how wonderful the devotees like Dhruva are who are seeing the Lord face to face. And as we think like that, Krishna becomes so happy. Shrinvatam swakata Krishna punya shravana kirtanam vidyantasta abhadrani vidyunoti shrittadam. Oh, you're hearing about me? You want to know about me? And he reveals himself to us. He recognizes us. He calls us to him. And then we become absorbed in reality. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes, sir.
Even Bhaktivinoda Maharaj, I think Mataji exhibited exactly the same thing that you were mentioning, because he was going through significant pain towards his last days. But as we see in his lectures and when we hear him, he was able to overcome all of that very nicely.
Yes. As I said, you can do that even materially. Prabhupada, Stalin was not a spiritually elevated person. And if somebody like Stalin, who was basically a demon, if he could put his mind in such a way that he was not disturbed even by surgery. Surgery is pretty severe pain. Somebody's cutting up your body. So certainly anybody can do that. Now, the difficulty is that if you try to do it materially, it's very difficult to go through a normal life in that state of consciousness, materially speaking. Because when you're in that state of consciousness, you're not affected by the pleasures of life either. So the only way that you can maintain that is if you're experiencing, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, pleasure within. Otherwise, it's not easy to maintain it. Yes? You had a question?
Physical pain is something which is there, and how do we detach ourselves from this kind of physical pain?
You let go, and you let go, and you put your mind in another place. Yes, physical pain is there, but what is physical pain? What is it? It's some electricity in the brain only. If you think about what physical pain and physical pleasure is, it's simply electricity in the brain. It's exactly like the lights on the screen in a movie. So it can be done. I've done it. It's possible to do it. Of course, if you do it mechanically, that it's not very easy to maintain it mechanically. But if you can do it mechanically, then you can get some idea of what it means to actually do it spiritually. But it can only be maintained if you have your attachment for the spiritual. Otherwise, we need to be attached to something. Again, we'll become attached to the material. And as soon as you're attached to the material, then you'll feel the pain. Yes, please. Yes, I also discovered that. When I was doing that, I realized that you had to have a tremendous amount of mental strength and determination in order to be detached from physical pain in a mechanical way. And I can understand that that was not the yoga for this age, because most of us don't have that much mental strength. It requires a tremendous amount of determination. But we're not talking about something that's mechanical. Whereas what we're suggesting is not something that's mechanical. Because as I said, the mechanical thing, you cannot maintain that. It's not possible to maintain it. As soon as you want to interact with the world, you can't maintain it anymore. And it requires that your mind is just completely fixed on one point. But it can be done, and anybody can learn how to do it. It's not a hard, I could teach you all how to do it. It's not a difficult thing to learn at all. I teach people how to do it. I teach ladies how to do it all the time for childbirth. So it's not a difficult thing to learn, and anybody can do it. But learning it mechanically is not going to solve your problem. It may solve a particular problem at a particular time, but it's not going to solve the whole problem of material miseries. But the way that we're saying is you actually develop, so you're invested, you become invested in Krishna. You become absorbed in the reality. I mean, just think, we were talking about also the example of a computer game. So if you have two people are sitting in a room with computers and they're playing one of these computer games where you become a character in the game. You've seen these games? So one person is absorbed in the game. And the person who's absorbed in the game, they don't even notice anybody who's in the room. Right? And when the character has some trouble, they become very angry or very, my name, right? Their emotions are tied up in what's going on in the game. And then think of another person who's putting their attention to the people in the room. He's talking with his friend, he's talking with his relatives, and sometimes he's just doing something in the game. So to that person, he's not going to be affected by what's happening in the game. We read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there's three consciousness that the great devotees have, internal, external, and mixed. When a devotee is fully in internal consciousness, they're not aware of the world practically at all. They're hardly even aware that it exists. They're hardly aware that they have a body or that their body is moving in the world. They're just absorbed in Krishna. They're in a state of trance. And we read many, many examples in the Shastra. Like Shamaka Rishi was in such a state of trance. And when Maharaj Parikshit entered the room and said, "May I have some water?" Shamaka Rishi didn't hear him. He didn't hear him. His ears were there, but he didn't hear him. Why? He was absorbed internally. Right? We have this example with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu many times, that he's absorbed in Radha Krishna Leela, and the devotees are trying to bring him to external consciousness, and he doesn't even hear them for a very, very long time. So in complete internal consciousness, one is not aware of the world at all. Then external consciousness, the devotee is aware of the world, but because he's not got attachment, his attachment is for Krishna, the things of the world do not disturb him. He is aware. He is definitely aware. Just like when you're driving a car, you have to be aware. Is there petrol in the car? Is there oil in the car? And mixed, is there partially aware of the world and partially in that absorption in Krishna Lila. So to get to the state, we need to be absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's form, Krishna's name. And to do that, we have to have affection for Krishna. That is not strength of mind. That has nothing to do with the strength of the mind. Nothing. It has to do with the desires of the heart. It doesn't have anything to do with any kind of material qualification. So anybody can do it. Practically speaking, anybody can even do the other for a short period of time. That is possible. Yes?
We'll go back to the point where this attachment is solved. When you were saying that this early class and these people in New Zealand, people, maybe you know, okay, they did get harm, okay, no problem. And so, but these people that get destroyed somehow, but you still not feeling any misery because of that. So because you're not attached to it, so just say okay. But we can also, I mean, I know this when we say when our friend, when my best friend, when his body gets destroyed, you know, it's only his body can say okay, happy go. It's only the meat bag that get destroyed. It's not the jiva. He will go something. He will get a different body, but it's no problem to overcome this. That it's only his body that gets destroyed. But what is this? When we say, or is this also attached when we say, okay, his body is destroyed, get it now, no problem, but. What is with his jiva? What is with his soul? The jiva, where is he going? Is he going back to Krishna, or what is with his jiva? What is with his spiritual progress? So, is this also attachment when we are thinking like that?
We are not.
We're
not afraid of attachment. We're afraid of the wrong kind of attachment. We want to have attachment. The first verse in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, think of me with your mind attached to me. To be very attached to Krishna and the devotees, that's a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, a shakti. We want strong attachment. And we want that strong attachment to the devotees, but we want it on the platform of truth, not on the platform of falsity. Material attachments means I'm attached to something false. It's exactly like somebody who's playing the computer game. And so the family is eating and he's not eating. The family is at the dinner table and they're laughing and talking and eating and he is fasting. Just playing this game. So that kind of attachment is a disturbance. The family is unhappy. We want our family member to come eat with us and enjoy with us. But to be attached to your real family, that is a good thing. So that we are actually the great devotees, they're feeling this love for all jivas, not only their family members and their friends. We're not afraid of attachment. That is impersonalism. We want attachment, very much. Therefore, we find the great devotees, they're saying, just like a young boy and a young girl are naturally attached to each other, let me be that attached to you. Right? Or just like when I was sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada when my oldest son was a little older than that, about the same age. And Prabhupada said, just like this mother is loving her child without any expectation of return, in the same way you should love Krishna. So my father asked Prabhupada, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no, but loving Krishna will help her to love her son. So when you actually develop an attachment for Krishna, then you become attached to all living entities, but not in an exploitive way. On a platform of freedom that you're feeling so satisfied with your relationship with Krishna that you can just give love to all living entities. Generally, my sorrow, if my friend or family member dies, usually my sorrow is because my enjoyment is now hampered. It's made some difficulty for my personal pleasure. That's generally the grief that one feels. So the real attachment to the jiva is very different. You know, I miss their company, we could talk about Krishna together, or I don't know where they're going, I hope that they're going in some nice situation. Yes?
To act, let's say, in this world, or to be, normal in this world, we And especially, okay, you know, so you come, some of your relatives died, for example, and then you don't feel really misery, but others feel strange that, you know, you don't feel misery, for example. So it's really kind of, but sometimes actually devotee feels misery and he shows and says,
okay, well, you're looking at two different things. First of all, just like we don't want to stop attachments, we don't want to stop desires, we certainly don't want to stop emotions. Emotions are one of the main symptoms of the soul and of life. And we read in Nectar Devotion all the emotions, or in Krishna book, all the emotions that the devotees have in relationship with Krishna. I've been thinking a lot how materialistic people actually don't like to show emotions very much. Materialistic people really, they get very uncomfortable if you show any kind of emotion, unless it's very mild.
It goes to south, they're more emotional?
Yes, the southern people are more emotional. That's true. That's true. But, yeah, there's some cultures. And when you go to the northern cultures, the only way you can show emotions is to drink. You know? Basically, every culture has some circumstance in which you're given permission to display emotions. Not even permission, but even you're expected. And one of them is at death. At death, you're expected to show strong emotions. At a birth, at a wedding, at a sporting event, at a theater presentation, you know, or when you're intoxicated. So these circumstances, the society says, in this circumstance, you are allowed or even expected to display strong emotions. But in general, in materialistic life, we consider that displaying emotions is uncivilized. And people are just supposed to be very... just like our Harinam parties. We're going out and singing and dancing in the street. So most people are not willing to sing and dance in the street. They're not willing to show so much joy in public. That's considered... Well, it's not proper that you're so happy in public. But... Well, we find that the devotees, they are experiencing such joy. Now, we find some accounts in the Shastra that the devotees are feeling such happiness in Krishna consciousness that they don't care what anybody thinks, and they show. But generally, they don't. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, those people who could not dance publicly, within their hearts, they were dancing. So generally, the devotee, just like if a person falls in love, materially speaking, you know, if you find some beautiful girl that you fall in love with and you're full of love for her and you're thinking about her all the time, you don't usually display that publicly, isn't it? You don't start jumping around the temple, I am in love. Maybe you're feeling that way in your heart, but generally not publicly displayed. So when one is feeling like that for Krishna, it's like a volcano of emotions, but you're not publicly displaying. Now, should you display the mundane emotions of the world? You can or you can't. Doesn't really have to see by the circumstances of whether or not it's going to be appropriate for your preaching. I mean, there's one place where Prabhupada says that one should be callous, even at the death of a very near relative. And we find Srivas Thakur, when his son died during the kirtan, callous, when you're working very hard, your skin gets tough. That's called a callous. Then you can't feel anything anymore.
Hardened.
Yes. Janashishu.
I was asking that when you are expected, like in such
you can.
Situation, but not if you don't have this emotion of sorrow.
Well, you can display for preaching if you need.
Okay, you need.
That's, you know.
Circumstantial.
That's not so important. But of course you can do like that. Of course you can do like that.
To blame.
You may also feel some genuine sorrow at the illusion of the people. So you're there at the funeral and you might feel genuine sorrow and compassion that people are in such illusion that they're thinking that someone changing their body is a catastrophe. And you may be crying real tears, but for a little different reason. Just like sometimes, many times, people come to me with their various problems. This is one of the things that happens when you are a traveling preacher. There's problems that people will not discuss with anybody that they live with, you know? But if somebody's traveling, they'll tell them. It's very, very common. It's one of the services that a traveling preacher offers the society, that people can reveal their hearts. And the problems that most people have are all very similar. There's probably only maybe 10 or 15 problems that people have, that everybody has. And, you know, you're basically hearing a little variety of the same problems over and over and over again. Very, very rare that you hear something new. Extremely rare. So, you know, for me, I'm hearing somebody's problem I've heard already 20,000 times. And I know that the problem is most likely, it is just due to illusion. But for the person in that problem, for them, it's a very serious problem. You know, a lot of them have to do with relationships. Almost probably 75% have to do with relationships. And I know that person is feeling a lot of pain. So what you can do is you can think, this person is really looking for Krishna. Actually, they're really looking for Krishna. They're just looking for Krishna in a wrong way. But they're looking for Krishna. And you feel very much connected with that person. And you actually feel a very emotional experience in connecting with that person. It's generally a very joyful experience, even if the person's problem is very severe. Actually, I was taught this by one preacher who said, there's a way that you can help people with their problems where you feel more energy after helping with them instead of less. And I said, please teach me this. So this, you're connecting with the person's looking for Krishna. And you end up feeling very emotional. But your emotions are on a different platform. But the person feels very satisfied because they really feel that you've connected with them. Although actually you're often connecting with them on a little different platform than they're thinking. But I find that I feel very satisfied and they feel very satisfied. But as far as the specifics of illusion, you feel very calloused. And I don't know if I'm explaining that very well. Should I give you an example?
Yes, especially if you're connecting at the different level.
Okay. So just like I was speaking to one lady who, she had gotten married 2 times, and her second husband had told her, I will marry you, but the day I turn 50, I will go. I will completely go. So he actually did that. As soon as he had his 50th birthday, he put on saffron cloth, he left, he said, now finish. No email, no phone, no nothing. I will never see you again. And she was living very far away from the devotees. She was living on a farm that her husband and herself had developed. I think her children were living far away. So she was completely alone. And she came to me just crying and crying and crying and crying and crying and crying. So I could see that this person is lonely for Krishna. What she's really lonely for is Krishna. She wants someone to love her. She wants somebody to take care of her. She wants to feel some security. Mostly she was feeling afraid. Who's going to take care of me? Who's going to love me? Actually, she's looking for Krishna. And this intense emotion that she's feeling, really, these emotions are for Krishna. But by mistake, she's putting them on this ordinary husband. And not very responsible husband either. But anyway, so she was taking the feelings that were supposed to be given to Krishna, and she was giving them to a little tiny part of Krishna in a wrong way. But her desire was for Krishna. And then I also saw that, just don't worry about it, just be peaceful. I also just sit down and wait, it's all right. I also saw that she was very much trying to be free from her misery through devotion. She was trying to chant more. She was trying to read more. And at one point in the conversation, I tried to kind of preach to her a little bit. And at one point she says, "You mean all of my suffering is due to my own attachment?" It was like, you know, the room is dark and you open the curtains a little bit and the whole room became full with light. I said, "Yes!" And then 2 minutes later she was, "Oh, my husband!" Like again, you close the curtains and it was all darkness. And I saw, I cannot help this lady. It's impossible to help this lady. She's not ready. She's not ready. She got once, for 1 second she could see. My problems are due to my own attachment, my own material attachment. And for that 1 minute she was happy. Her face was glowing and it was a beautiful thing. And then again, she covered in darkness. But I was seeing she's looking for Krishna. And someday she'll find Krishna. Someday she'll achieve it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow. But someday she'll find the real husband, the real lover, the real son, the real father, the real shelter. And then she'll see that this experience she's going through now was a great blessing. So then I just held her hand and I said, "It's okay." I said, "Krishna loves you and everything will be okay. Don't worry. Just keep chanting and keep reading and someday everything will be okay." And I felt a lot of love and affection for this woman. Even though I couldn't solve her problem. I couldn't bring the husband back. I couldn't do that. And nor could I even really bring her to transcendental knowledge. She wasn't ready to come. But I just felt that I cared about her very much. And at least she felt, here's somebody who cares about me. Here's someone who cares about my difficulty. And I felt, even talking about it now, I feel very full of happiness. That here's somebody who is looking for Krishna. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Yes.
When you give your attention to the time to people, sometimes you... I mean, sometimes, like this lady, people are not ready to go forward. But there are some people who come again and again. I mean, again and again, maybe they want your attention. Again and again, they don't want to accept anything. How you deal with this?
That's a very good question. And in order to answer that question, I'll tell you another story. Is that all right? So there was one lady who was a very good friend of mine for a long time. And then she went through many very serious difficulties in her life. One after another, after another, after another. And she was finally in a situation where she was alone. She was raising a child alone. And practically so many things in her life had fallen apart. And she would contact me over and over and over again. And I knew that I will never solve her problems, not materially and not even spiritually. That sometimes I would try to give her spiritual instruction, she would just become angry. It's not possible for me to help her. And I'm thinking, all this lady wants from me is love. And already she would be calling me all the time and she'd talk to me on the phone for 2 hours and write me so many emails. And I thought, if I give her love, then I'll never get rid of her. That's how I was thinking. So I would be very cold. And I was thinking that this person is just a disturbance. So one day I was talking to another friend of mine. And I was saying, oh, this lady, she's always calling me and emailing me. And she's just a disturbance. I can never help her. She'll never get her needs satisfied. And the other lady started crying. She said, "That's so sad." She said that, "I feel so sorry for people like that, that they're going to be lonely their whole life and they're never going to get the love that they need." And then I felt very ashamed that I was so cold. And I thought, next time this woman contacts me, I'm going to give her love immediately. So she called me on the phone and she said, "I want a recipe." And I knew she didn't really want a recipe. She just wants love. "Oh, thank you for calling. It's so good to hear from you. I love talking to you." I didn't mean it at all fake. I said, oh, I really, you're such a good friend. And the phone call lasted only 1 minute instead of 2 hours. And I was astonished. I thought, oh, why didn't I do that a long time ago?
What she did after this?
After that, she contacts me less and less and less and less and less.
Just why it lasted 1 minute?
Because I gave her love.
And she said, thank you.
That was it. That was all she wanted. I gave her what she wanted, and then she went away. The whole problem was solved. It was very interesting. And I've done that. Anytime she emails me, she doesn't contact me so much anymore. But if she contacts me, I always just say, I'm so happy to hear from you. I'm so fortunate that you've written me. You're such a good friend. Thank you so much for being a friend. And then that's it. But if I was cold, then it was going on and on and on. If someone's hungry, give them something to eat. That's all. Just give them something to eat. They're asking over and over again because they're hungry. And I found that Krishna was very pleased with me for dealing with her like that. Very, very pleased with me. That's a whole other story. That's a story I could tell you a little bit about karma and how I learned that you get what you give. That whole experience was very, very interesting for me. Many times when people come to you for advice, all they want to know is that you care. That's all. They don't really want you to, you can't fix it anyway. You can't fix it. You're going to, fix their broken bone and their bad bank balance. And if people are ready for higher spiritual truth, well, give it to them. If they're actually ready for that, that's wonderful. That's the most exciting thing. When someone comes to you for help and they want to know the real answer and they actually take it. But even if they're not ready, just that they know that somebody cares. And we should care. We should care. Suridam sarvabhutanam. Suridam sarvadehinam. The devotee actually genuinely cares about everybody. After that other friend talked to me and I could see that she really cared, I felt ashamed. Why don't I actually care? So at first I was just pretending. Gradually I came to actually care. I mean, just recently in Russia, I finished a class and I didn't have any time at all. And this one person came to me and just, they wanted to tell me their problems, but I didn't have time. So I just said, it's okay. I said, Krishna loves you and it will all be okay. Don't worry. And that was enough. Sometimes that can be enough. Thank you for talking to me. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy that you're actually looking for Krishna. And you can see, what is the person really looking for? They're really looking for something. They're really looking for eternity, knowledge, and bliss, ultimately. Everyone who comes to you with all their problems, what are they looking for? Eternity, knowledge, and bliss, only. And you can see that. Oh, I can hear that, what you really want is some understanding. Yes, I really want understanding. Or what you really want is freedom. Or you really want an authentic life. You really want to have a community where people care about each other. One thing I notice devotees often are looking for is meaning. People want to do something that has meaning and significance. And I find many times when devotees are upset about some problem, it's because they feel that what they're doing is not meaningful. It seems that the core difficulties I find among devotees are often they're looking for appreciation. That's a very big one. They're looking for community. They're looking for meaning. Those seem to be at the top. Or authenticity. Sometimes they're really looking for authenticity. They want a life that's authentic. You see?
But what
is life authentic? They want a genuine life. They're feeling their life is not genuine. They're feeling they're not living an authentic life. Let's say someone comes to you and they say, my problem is that I'm working so much, I hardly have time for my spiritual life, I want balance in my life. They're probably really looking for authenticity or meaning. They want some real substance, some genuine substance. They want their life to have genuine substance. So what are they looking for? They're looking for Krishna. Krishna is the absolute truth. Krishna's ultimate authenticity. Real meaning is found in Krishna. Real community is found in Goloka Vrindavan. All these things are found in reality with Krishna. And you can, if you say that to people, often their difficulty just melts away. But you have to find the right thing. Say, oh, I hear that you're very frustrated because you really need to have some meaning in your life. And if you've hit the right thing, the person just is relieved. You don't have to solve the problem. At all. Not at all. And then you're exchanging some very deep, genuine emotion with that person. All right, I should stop now because it's very late. But I hope that gives you some idea. So also if people are crying at a funeral, what are they looking for? They're looking for a connection with another living being, right? They've lost their connection with their child or their father or their husband or their whatever. They want connection. What is connection? They want yoga. They're looking for yoga, right? That's wonderful. And you can feel such compassion. Here is a jiva that's looking for yoga. How, what a beautiful thing that is. And as you feel that, you'll feel some spiritual emotion, which they'll take to be material. That's okay. Not concerned about that. Is that all right? And if you can't do that, then if you want to pretend just for preaching, you can do that too. Thank you.